Jarquez busts 1,000 yards, and let's talk about it.
In the world full of podcasts, he's the undisputed heavyweight champion of hot takes, an Auburn sports homer, master of the book, and message board legend. Get your buttons buttoned and your hats flattened, because the Top Button Podcast is about to kick off, and you don't want to miss your courtside seat. Now, here's your host, Charlie Five.
Yes, sir, we're back. It's another episode of the Top Button Podcast live edition, just like we do every single week, Sunday night, 8 o'clock. Let's have some fun. Tonight we're going to talk about Jarquez going over 1,000 yards and everything that that means, how monumental it is, the impact, where he ranks in Auburn history, and just how, let's just love on Jarquez. It's time to love on Jarquez. And I think he holds a stat record that isn't measured, that should be measured. We're going to go over that too. Talk a little bit about Walker White's debut in a little bit more detail, some things that I saw, some things that are exciting, some things that obviously he's got to work on, and continue this greatest catch conversation. This conversation, I put it out on Twitter, and it's gone really deep. A lot of people are weighing in. I want to get your thoughts, and then obviously I'm going to love a little bit on the defense, just a little bit more, some categories that we're killing it in that I want to talk about. Before we get started, I want to give a shout-out to mybookie.ag. Use coupon code NEXTROUND for a double-up deposit bonus. Guys, Auburn opens. There's some lines at 2.5 points. There's some lines at 1 point, underdogs coming up Saturday against Texas A&M. So, I mean, that's kind of crazy. But if you want to get in on some of that action, log in, use coupon code next round, get that double up deposit bonus, and then throw it down on the Auburn Tigers if you think we can pull out the upset this upcoming Saturday. All kinds of sports betting lines that you can imagine. A lot of fun. Check it out, mybookie.ag. So Jarquez goes over 1,000 yards through 10 games, and it's the first time that's happened for him in his 4 years. And I got to be honest, I've never rooted for something so hard, I think. The only thing I think I could root for harder would be KLS getting to 1,000 yards. But I don't think I've been so happy for somebody that's been through so much than I've been for Jarquez Hunter. I mean, if you really, really think about everything that he's been through, holy cow. I mean, he comes in, he's part of Harsin's, you know, first class. He shares carries with Tank Bigsby. You have all the upheaval that you have after that first year. And then his coach gets fired midseason the second year. You go through a coaching change, and then just basically adversity after adversity. You know, last year he almost gets to 1,000 yards with virtually no passing game, no balance whatsoever. And then this year you've had your ups and downs. He's been more the one steady figure throughout this whole thing. He gets his career game versus Kentucky, and then finally goes over 100 yards. And I'll tell you what, goes over 1,000 yards. And he goes over 100 yards, and he's in there with Walker White, and he's jumping up and down and skipping like it's his first time playing football. He's just fired up. It's just so, so incredible to see. So, so, so incredible to watch him finally hit that milestone. And, like, I mean, when you really think about, when you really look at what he's done at Auburn, I mean, he is one of the all-time greats. He's one of the all-time great running backs in the long history, long tradition of great Auburn running backs. I mean, as it sits right now, he's number 5 overall in total. He's number six overall in all-time rushing yards in a career. He's got 2 games left guaranteed. If he goes over 137 yards combined over the next 2 games, he jumps Ben Tate to number 5 all time. And then if he just goes over 184 yards in the next 2 games, he jumps Joe Cribbs at 4th all time. Number 3 all time is a little bit out of reach, I would think. It's 340 yards, so he would have to go for basically 170 over the next 2 games, which is definitely not impossible, but probably a little bit out of reach. And then But if somehow Auburn wins both games and gets to a bowl game, I mean, top three all-time leading rusher at Auburn is something that is not out of reach. It's crazy how well he's done. It's crazy how much he's meant to this Auburn team throughout this dark time, this transition, this dark time. He's been the brightest spot. I mean, he really has. And it's something that's been that I hope that he just doesn't go forgotten. I really do. I hope it means as much to Auburn fans as it does to me 10 years from now. I hope people are still talking about him and not trying to erase this time out of your memory, and you want to get it to where you don't have to think about this anymore. But when you're in the valley, Jarquez has been the only bright spot, consistent bright spot through this whole time. So definitely a lot like KLS, I want him to be remembered and loved on for an ever and ever. Amen. Because he's been unbelievable. There's one stat, okay, that I think I want to petition the NCAA that they need to start measuring. They need to start taking notes of. They need to have rankings. And that is hurdling children, okay? Hurdling children needs to become a stat, because Jarquez Hunter would lead the whole wide world in that. It's unbelievable. He's done it every single year he's been here. He's had one, and he's had multiple this year. It's unbelievable. He's a freak athlete. He's not as tall as anything, but he can jump over a 6-foot human in the blink of an eye. It's crazy. And it's like at some point in time, like, the opposing defenses have to be expecting it. Like, you got to be looking for the hurdle. And they don't. They still go low, and he jumps them. It's crazy. You know, Saquon Barkley got so much hype for his, you know, like, spin hurdle a couple of weeks ago. I mean, I think Jarquez could be that guy in the NFL where he has just multiple highlight reel hurdles moving forward. But yeah, NCAA, if you're watching this, hurdling children needs to become a stat on the stat sheet that we're tracking, that we're measuring against the ages through the decades. Hurdling children needs to become a stat, because Jarquez Hunter would lead the whole wide world in that stat. So 6.4 yards per carry for his career. In the worst offensive stretch of football, maybe in the history of Auburn ever, 6.4 yards per carry. That first Harsin year, the offense was fairly decent until Bo got hurt. It was god awful the second year. Our offense last year was god awful, and then this year, the offense has had balance, which I think has helped him out a lot. And it's just bogged down at times, but he's averaging 7 yards a carry this year. I think his stat, you could put him up against anybody. You could put him up against any running back in Auburn history. And I think there's an argument there. He holds his own against any of them. And I think he should definitely be given all the glory and all the praise, because he's been through it, man. And he's kept a smile on his face, and he's worked hard. Could have gone multiple places, multiple times, and probably made a lot more money in NIL. Ole Miss wanted him so badly this year. He's probably the difference in the two losses at Ole Miss. If he goes to Ole Miss last year, I think he changes that offense completely. He's head and shoulders better than anybody they have on that roster. He would have morphed them into a really unstoppable force, and he would have had an opportunity to probably play on an undefeated playoff team, and he turned it down. He never went in the portal, but he had that opportunity. They were coming after him, tampering hard to get him. He could have gone, and he chose to stay here. And, I mean, what do you say? What else can you say? Holy cow, what a guy. So definitely want to show him some love. I wanted to make sure – I didn't want to throw it into a segment in the last game. I wanted it to be the number one topic of the show. I wanted it to have its own conversation. To start a show off, because I think it's so important to show him so much respect. All right, Walker White. We didn't really get to talk about much of Walker White. if I'm being completely honest, I had a work event. So I had to go back and watch highlights. I listened to the whole game. I had to go back and watch some highlights. So I missed his, obviously his debut live, but I went back and watched it. And he kind of got the shaft a little bit. And let me tell you why. Okay, so he got two real possessions where, in my opinion, you get in those type games, when he got the ball, he had two real possessions to where they could run the whole offense and nobody thinks you're being, you know, a D-bag, for lack of better words. You can throw the ball around. You can make stuff happen. You can get some good work in, and not a lot of people are going to be, mad at you for running the score up because of the time that of the game that he went in. The two drives where he could have really got some good work in, it was great field position for if you're trying to win a football game. It's terrible field position if you want to get some good work in. I mean, the first drive, he gets the ball. They go for it on fourth down, and he gets it on our own 36. Okay, so you got a short field. You can't throw one deep, you know, which I'm sure they wanted to let one rip to somebody. Couldn't do that. So you just had to kind of run your half court offense. And you know, his first play was inside zone right up the gut for 6 yards, 6 or 7 yards. It was just looked really, really good. So that was the first possession. And then the second possession, and he fumbles on that one, which he was trying to fight for extra yards, and he was carrying a human for a couple of yards, and that human ended up ripping the ball out. But his second possession, you know, that we stop him, it's you know, fourth down, they're going to punt it. He's probably going to get the ball on about the 30 or 40. He's going to have a very good chance. He's going to get a very good chance to run the offense at a great opportunity, because there's still so much time left in the game that it doesn't look that bad if you're throwing the ball down the field at this point in time, because you're just trying to get guys experience and the game's sort of out of hand, but it's not too far out of hand, I guess. Well, what do? That the punter fumbles the snap. So now they gets the ball on the 12. So in reality, you get the ball at almost where you fumbled the ball on the previous drive. You just lost a lot of time. So those are his two drives that are really like game time drives where he could get some action. And it just didn't work out. Like, he just didn't – the field position kind of cost him the playbook as far as, like, open it up for him to be able to really get some good work in. But he had three drives, led a touchdown drive on the 12-yard – from the 12-yard line. I thought that he looked really, really good running the ball. He's way bigger than I expected. Like, he looks like a – multiple year college quarterback. He does not look like a true freshman. I mean, he's 6'3", 225, and he's solid. When he's coming up the middle on that, inside zone, buckle your chin strap, because you're about to get rocked. You're about to get a face full of something, and you better have your belt buckled, because he's a load, and he's quick too. He explodes through, which makes it even that much more. That inside zone game could be really nasty with him. That inside outside, a lot of stuff that could be in that run game that really opens up the possibilities of, you know, well, that run, the run game next year. It really opens up, takes a lot of pressure off the offensive line, takes a lot of pressure off of the running backs because of his ability to. For his ability to be able to be another running threat. He's going to take attention. He's going to take eyes. He's definitely going to be – the running part of his game is going to be something that's going to be very, 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 very intriguing, I think, and very, very explosive as well. Again, his fumble, I thought, was just more of an effort thing. This is your only chance to play, and you're trying to fight for some extra yards, and you get one stripped. Not too mad about him. Not too mad at him about that. I mean, that just – comes with time, and you got to know when to get down, especially when you're the quarterback. The ball explodes out of his hand. It's really the arm talent. From an arm talent perspective, I'm trying to go back to quarterbacks that I can think of at Auburn. And from just an arm talent perspective, it's hard for me to really think of one where the ball just really, really jumps, really, really spins as well as it does out of his hand. I mean, the very first pass he threw, it was high. He was juiced a little bit. But I mean, it just got on Cam Brown before he could, you know, really get up and get it. Like, I think that over time, that's maybe a more makeable play, but Cam Brown's not used to catching balls from, Walker White in a game like that. That pass from Peyton is a little bit easier to time and get up and get it. When Walker zips one over there, you better be ready because it's coming in hot. The throw, he only completed two passes, but one of the passes he completed to KLS was an NFL throw. It was an NFL throw. It was the very last drive. And again, timing was everything. He got a very good opportunity on the last drive, but the game was out of hand. So if you're throwing the ball around with 5 or 6 minutes left to go and you're up 40, you look like a, you know what. So they couldn't really throw the ball down the field like they probably wanted to, but he did get to zip one to KLS, I believe, to start the drive off maybe, or second play of the drive for a first down. And it's a opposite field, like boundary, like dig route from the left hash all the way across the field to the sideline through a dart, just a dot, a laser. That's an NFL throw. I mean, that's not an easy throw. It's typically in the air a long time. It's not in the air that long when Walker lets it go. He zipped it over there. Just arm strength is incredible. Arm strength is as advertised. And I was very, very, very impressed with him. I wish he could have that Perry Thompson back shoulder again. I wish he could have that over again, not only for him, but for Perry too. You could tell they're trying to get some stuff to Perry. They tried to throw a RPO slant on the very first possession, and it just wasn't there. And then that back shoulder, it was just too low. If it was, and you saw Perry say, get it up. If you get it up, I catch it. And he probably does. But I think that would have been really good for both of them. So I'll tell you this. I thought I was a little bit concerned about the competition that he played in high school. But after seeing him, and I understand the competition, I understand Louisiana Monroe, I understand all that. So don't get me wrong. And I'm not anointing him a Heisman winner. But I'll just say there's some tools there that I can see translating to a very good SEC player. In time, he's going to need some development, and I could see him being a true backup next year. And if you got to come in, if you got to go to him, there's some tools there that if you develop over this offseason through the spring and whatnot, that he could be a very serviceable backup, and even, you know, maybe make some noise in some different types of packages. I just think he's got a lot more raw. He's got a lot more tools than I expected. I'll just leave it at that. And then a couple more things, and then I want to get into the chat. Now, this is a topic I want to throw into the chat as far as greatest catch ever. Okay. So Cam's touchdown. I threw it out there. I said, I think that's the greatest catch I've ever seen that's the greatest catch I've ever seen. I didn't really specify. What I really meant was from a level of difficulty standpoint. That's probably the greatest catch I've ever seen from an Auburn player. And I think I still believe it is, but I got a lot of people that had some really good ideas as far as really good catches that maybe people don't remember. And I tried to go back and think of, before I even sent that, I was like thinking about plays in my head that I could compare it to, that level of difficulty was there. I mean, guys, he's reaching back, diving with one hand and scores a touchdown and stays in play. Like, there's so many levels to that. It's the level of difficulty of that catch was just really unreal. But I want you to throw some in the comments. Tell me what you think the greatest level of difficulty catch is. And we'll hit it. If I don't mention it, I'll hit them. If I don't mention it, already, I'll bring them up and we'll talk about them. But a couple of the ones, obviously Arkansas State, Kyle Davis was an unbelievable catch in 2015, maybe. It was a one-handed catch, but it was almost a backhand. It was a one-handed backhand catch. So in other words, it's not like you're catching it with your body. He caught it against his body. Like he reached across and caught it with one hand. It was unreal. It was unbelievable. That's one that's definitely up there for me as far as level of difficulty. One that I kind of forgot until I went back and rewatched it. And then there's so many layers to it. Duke Williams had a one-handed catch for a touchdown against Louisiana Tech in between two defenders, and it was deflected at the line of scrimmage, which was unreal. So it was deflected at the line of scrimmage. So he readjusted after it was deflected at the line of scrimmage and caught it in between two defenders that were converging. And if they hit him, he probably drops it, but he caught it and then snatched the arm back between them and they kind of ran into each other. It was incredible. I remember that. I see a really funny one. War Eagle Y, any wide receiver that caught a ball thrown by TJ Finley should be in the conversation. That's classic. That is absolutely classic. At times. Brad Browning, this is one that's on my list, and I talked about it on the show. Lutzenkirchen, it was against Ole Miss, and it was a little play action. They snuck him under against Ole Miss. He reached back behind him with one hand and palmed it. So he's running to his right. The ball's behind him. He reaches back with one hand, and he doesn't ever bring it to his body or bring the other hand in to help the catch. He catches it and then sort of palms it and then dives for the end zone pylon with the same hand. And again, he's running a flat route, reaches behind him. The ball was a terrible ball. I can't remember if Barrett Trotter threw it or Clint Mosley, whoever. I think it would have been Barrett Trotter or Clint Mosley. He reached behind him, reached for the pylon. That to the level of difficulty was that one was really high. So if you can think of some more, there was another one from 1986, Lawyer Tillman. It was against Georgia Tech. It was a diving one-handed catch that ended up being a touchdown. It was very impressive. I've never seen the film of it until somebody posted it in the tweet. And if you go find that tweet, there is a lot of good highlights that are of those catches that are put in there. So I see this one a lot too, and I'm probably going to have a hot take here, okay, and it's probably going to make some people mad. Ricardo Lewis, that is one, the prayer at Jordan-Hare. Now, most improbable catch, I would say yes, without a doubt. If you think about all of the aspects that go into that, the fourth down, the time of the game left, the bomb, it's a bomb, and Ricardo has outrun, he outran the ball. He outran everybody. Didn't even really make a play on the ball as it was in the air. It's tipped, and it's tipped up instead of slapped down, and then it just so happened he's run past it, but it tips into like a perfect spiral and lands in his hand. So most improbable, yes, but here's a hot take. I'm going to say this. The actual catch part of that, not super difficult. Let's just say that. Now, picking it up off of a tip, maybe you could throw some difficulty level points in there. But, I mean, it was like they set it. It was like they threw it directly into his hands from that spot. So, it's really only like a 10-yard catch if you think about it because it went off of their hand. It went off of their hands. So, most improbable, most impactful, sure. But as far as like level of difficulty, I think Cam's touchdown against Ole Miss, think about that one, was infinitely more difficult than that catch by Ricardo Lewis. Now, again, the Ricardo Lewis catch was infinitely more improbable, but still, I'm just gonna throw that out there. I'm sure that I'll get a lot of hate on that one, but I think that's a very interesting conversation. I'd love to have a show where we just went through like all the top plays that we can remember, like ever. Top runs, top this, top that, best defensive game, best this, best that. Catches was fun. That was a lot of fun. So I agree. This was a really good one. Here's the Marcus Davis catch in 2013 against A&M. He caught it. I think he did. Is that the one he kind of pinned on his helmet? And if I'm not mistaken, he threw it it was into the sun as well. The sun was setting. And so like the ball was coming, it was dead into the sun. It was third, it had to be a big third down. And I think he caught it and kind of pinned it up against his helmet, made a really good play. I think that is a really good one that I can remember. I totally agree. That was a good one. Emory Blake touchdown during the comeback. That one was good because of how hard he got. They tried to rip the ball out of his hands, and somehow, and he was bobbling it too. As he was bobbling it, and he got it like they tried to rip it out of his hands, and somehow he held on to it. So that was a really good play. Those are fun. We'll go through the comments on that one. Last thing I want to talk about before I get into the comments for sure, for 100% for the rest of the show, is the defense. Look, I talked about it a little bit on the reaction show, and I didn't even really realize how good they actually are. I thought maybe I'm just going with feelings, but they're actually really daggum good. 18th in the country in scoring defense, 13th in total defense. This is in the country. This is in the world of football, of college football. 12th in total rushing defense, 7th in yards per carry. You can't run on this team. And again, you're starting three wide receivers, and you're starting three true freshmen, and then there's multiple other freshmen that play significant minutes. Like it's unreal. They're really, really good. It's unbelievable the job they've done on defense. I mean, they've been put in bad position after bad position, and they just continue to get better every single game, no matter what the offense gives them. They still continue to perform. So with that being said, let's jump in the comments. Let's have some fun. If you got questions about recruiting, if you got comments on catches, things like that I missed, definitely hit me with that. This is a good one. NH342. This was on my list. This needs to be on the list. Who caught the ball out of bounds in the air and threw it back to the AU player in bounds? I think it was against UNC. It was. It was the Peach Bowl in like the late 90s, maybe. Or I can't remember exactly the year. No, it was not the late 90s. It was early 2000s because Carlos Dansby played closer to that. He played in the early 2000s. He goes out of bounds. Carlos Dansby jumps out of bounds, throws the ball back in bounds. He was way out of bounds too. Intercepts the ball, throws it back into bounds to I think maybe Dontarius Thomas to be able to complete the interception. That was on my list. I just kind of forgot it. That was an unbelievable, unbelievable play. Definitely a good one. Stewart, I think this is what I'm talking about. Lawyer Tillman back in the end zone catch against Georgia Tech. That was the one-handed catch. He had a one-handed catch in the end zone, and it was a diving over the shoulder one hand with a dude draped on him. Go to my Twitter. You'll find it. It was a really good play. Unbelievable catch. Definitely one of the top difficulty level catches that I can remember. Thomas Jones, our boy Thomas. Keontae Scott, is he hurt or has he been benched for the season? I think you know the answer to this, Thomas. I don't want to say it's all injury. I think a little bit of it's just his play at times had been suspect, and then obviously he's been dinged up. I hate to say this, but it feels like the defense has gotten better since he's been out. So I'll hate it for him. I hope he does well in the NFL, but it does seem like he got benched more so than he hurt. War Eagle Y homie says Keontae Scott has injured my eyes. Let's talk about this, Connie 4AU. What do you think about the apple cart turnover with quarterback recruiting today? Does UGA take Juju? If so, what about the recruit they already have, Ryan Montgomery, A&M with no quarterback as well? So if you haven't heard the news, Julian Lewis decommitted from USC, which is the least shocking news in the whole wide world, at all. I mean, everybody, that was coming. Now it's, does he go to Indiana or does he go to Colorado? And that's going to be one to watch. I'm not sure which one he goes to. He's got a connection at Indiana. And then obviously they love Deion at Colorado, and Deion and Colorado is going to have a quarterback opening clearly because Shador's gone, and they're going to have to, you know, find a quarterback. And I think he could probably start right away. So that'll be interesting to watch. Shortly after that, Hassan Longstreet, who's been committed to Texas A&M since maybe like June or before, flips his commitment to USC. He's from California. A lot of people kind of saw that one coming, thought that maybe one to watch. He flips his commitment to USC. Now that leaves Texas A&M without a quarterback this late in the game. So people have speculated, what are they going to do? Are they going to go to, you know, are they going to look at possibly Keelon Russell, who plays, he's committed to Alabama. At this point in time, you got Marcel Reed, that's your true freshman. It's so late in the game. I don't know. I wouldn't be shocked if they don't take a high school quarterback. It's just so late in the game. So I honestly think the musical chairs ends there. Now, I could be wrong. Now, if they take Keelon Russell, that creates a whole lot of problems. Because not problems, that creates a whole lot of drama. But I think maybe it stops there. I really do. I think it stops there. I think Texas A&M just probably okay with just not taking a quarterback. Let's keep going. Yeah, thoughts on Sebastian Williams Adams' commitment basketball. Bruce lands another top four-star power forward. Sebastian Williams Adams, it was one that there seemed like there was about 10 guys Bruce could have chosen from. He has recruited high school this period so incredibly well with so limited of NIL funds. And it really felt like he had about 10 guys he could have chose from, and he had to figure out which ones that he could fit in the budget, basically. And Sebastian Williams Adams is one who's going to be that really athletic power forward, could probably even play maybe even some three at times. He's got to work on his shot a little bit, but just a really explosive, you know, Chaney Johnson type guy. I feel like that's kind of who you're getting. I mean, he's maybe not quite the freak athlete, maybe closer to Jalen Williams than Chaney Johnson, because Chaney's like he's an alien as far as an athlete goes. But yeah, I mean, this high school basketball class is going to be kind of almost on the level of that, you know, Jared Harper class. And you got two really, really explosive guards. One of them a little bit bigger than the other, and both of them can shoot. And then you got Sebastian William Adams, and you're going looking at hopefully rounding this class out with Sean Abe. I don't know how to pronounce his last name. It looks like Abave. Abave. That's what his last name looks like. And he looks like he's 28 years old. And he can do it all. He's an elite forward. He can shoot the three. He can score at the rim, and he's another 6'8" guy. So you got a really good chance. You're going to have a chance to have one of the best high school basketball recruiting classes in the country. High school basketball recruiting rankings are a little bit weird because it all depends on your needs. You know what I mean? Like you could have, you may not need four or five high school guys, but Auburn does. They're going to take four this class, and then maybe, you know, five or six different guys from the portal. It's going to have to be a big class because you lose so much. But yeah, really, really impressive high school basketball class that are going to be a lot of fun to watch. So good, very, very good comment there. Very good question. Let's keep going back. Let's go back to the beginning a little bit. Let's see here. Let's keep going. Derek Dapp, friend, I saw you, man. You promised you'd be on here, and you're here. I appreciate you, brother. This is a good one right here. Imagine having a 1,000-yard rusher, a 1,000-yard receiver, a 2,500-yard passer, and best possible record at 6-6. Completely blows my mind, and me too, man. I mean, just if you really think about it, it's some of the best production that you've had in quite a while. And I mean, just look at the spread this weekend. Auburn's playing a top, you know, whatever team, you know, definitely, I don't know exactly what they're ranked, a very highly ranked team with a 4-6 record. And you're only a, 2 point at most, wherever you find it on your line, you're at most a 2 point underdog. I mean, it's like you're knocking on the door. You just can't figure out how to open it. You know what I mean? Like, you can't figure out how to get in. You're doing everything right. You're doing a lot of things right. Not everything right. You're doing a ton of things right, but you're doing the most critical things wrong. And I don't know if that's, I don't really know where you point the finger. But it does make you feel like, man, if you can just correct a few of these things, you're a very, very competitive football team. You're a good football team. I know I saw somebody joke, this is the best 4-6 football team in the country. And it might be. It might be, for whatever that's worth. But, yeah, I mean, I would have never thought, if you'd have told me these stats right here, I would say we were whooping some A, if you know what I mean. If you told me we'd had a 1,000-yard rusher, 1,000-yard receiver, 2,500-yard passer, I would say we're either one or two losses maximum. And here we are at 4-6. So it's wild. It's wild. Let's keep going. Let's keep going. Oh, I mean, yeah, this is something I mentioned when I'm talking about Jarquez, James Rutten. Jarquez had to do all of this against stack boxes pretty much his whole career. I mean, we haven't been able to throw the ball for 4 years. I mean, we've thrown it a little bit this year. They've been able to throw it around a little bit this year. But in reality, you've had almost no balance for 4 years, and he's done what he's done. It's incredible. Like, again, situationally, all the context on the call, all the context that surrounds it, unbelievable. Unbelievable 4 years, unbelievable performance that he's given us. Let's keep going. Let's get a couple more and call tonight. Appreciate you guys for jumping in on a Sunday night. I love doing this. This is one of my favorite parts of the week. Cam, what's up with Jared Smith? He was at South Carolina this weekend. He got an Ole Miss crystal ball. I think he was in Ole Miss last week. He got an Ole Miss crystal ball from one of the Ole Miss writers who's about 65% career on his picks, on his crystal ball picks. So I don't know how much stock I want to put into that, but I think it's definitely going to be something to watch. Jared Smith, when we first started talking about him, Jared Smith was one of those guys where it always felt like, it seems like there's one in every class in the state of Alabama. There's one kid that's like I'm not interested in either in-state school. And honestly, Jared Smith was that guy. Like, I just didn't think he had any interest in going to Auburn or Alabama. So when he was committed, he did commit to Auburn. It kind of came as a shock to me because early on it was Tennessee, then it was Georgia, and then, you know, South Carolina's obviously always been in there. It just always seemed like he's just bound and determined to leave the state. But I do think he loves Auburn. I do think he loves Hugh, and I think he loves what he sees in the defense. But he's obviously, I mean, I don't blame, I mean, it's hard not to expect these guys to want to look around. I mean, it's honestly more remarkable. It's so remarkable that more guys haven't been looking around, that more guys aren't, you know, going on a lot of visits or even being flip risks or getting crystal balls elsewhere. Like, it's honestly remarkable. But with all that being said, Auburn's got a very deep defensive line class, I think. I think they still have a very good shot to hold on to him next week. He's going to be back in Auburn. Next weekend is the big recruiting weekend. Signing day is so crazy now. Signing day is the Wednesday after the Iron Bowl. So, like, you have the Iron Bowl, and then it's a dead period, and then you have signing day. It's crazy. So next weekend is Auburn's last home game. So it's the top big recruiting weekend where they got to really have a blowout. So you get him in, and you can decide, do we want to – you know, if South Carolina's come to the table with, you know, a big NIL package, so is Ole Miss, you know, and he's like, hey, I want to be here, but we got to get everything straight. You decide, hey, is it, do we want to, Do we want to push? Do we want to get in a bidding war? Do we want to do whatever we got to do? At least you get him here for that last visit to decide. Or maybe it's just the last visit to really convince him that he wants to be at Auburn. So it's going to be this weekend is big, not only for Jared Smith, but for several. And I think, you know, it's not going to shock me. We're going to lose somebody. Like, you're going to lose somebody. It's just impossible with the way the season's played out, with as many people as you have committed. Like, you're going to lose somebody. So I'm prepared for that. I just don't know exactly who that is. So, but yeah, he's definitely going to be one that you're going to battle for. And if you want to keep him, I think you got the opportunity to, but you're going to have to get after it. You're going to have to really knock it out of the park next week and show him that you need him and that you want him. So we'll see what happens. But I definitely think he's definitely one to watch as far as being, you know, a possible decommitment. This could be fun. David Wunderlich, if you had a time machine, you could grab one player that's not a QB from Auburn's past and add to the roster, who adds the most wins in your opinion? Well, I think I would add – I'm going to throw something out there. I think it's be maybe a little bit outside the box. But I'm going to throw out – Marcus McNeil. Either Marcus McNeil or Greg Robinson. I think a left tackle that is an NFL left tackle is the difference in multiple wins on this team. I really do. I think that it would have allowed Dylan Wade to play guard like we wanted him to be able to play. I think that would have changed a lot of things. So I know a lot of people are probably going to say quarterback. I think I would go left tackle. I really do. I think I would go with one of those guys, Marcus McNeil, Greg Robinson, maybe Marcus McNeil, because I think he was more of a true left tackle, whereas Greg Robinson ended up playing like – he was really more like a guard playing tackle. But I think I'd go with one of those guys, and I think that would have made a huge difference this year. If Percy could have been the guy, I think this team's a lot better. There's been some issues there, communication wise, and then just sheer talent at left tackle. But I think that's what I would have gone. That's the route I would have gone. War Eagle Wyoming said Daniel Carlson. That's a good one. That would have been a good one. Yeah, he's the difference in probably at least two games for sure. It changes play calling, changes everything. A kicker would have been a big deal. That's a good one. Couple more, and we're going to call it a day. I saw a good one, and I just saw it popped up, and then I missed it. Keep going. Come on, where is it? God, where is it? Brad Brown, Vegas has been high when putting out these point spreads. I just think, you know what I think, Brad? This is crazy. I just think they have no idea what to expect from Auburn. Auburn is the one team where I feel like they have to have no clue how to set a line for that game, because they can come out and take a lead on anybody, it feels like at times, and then they're going to end up they'll blow it in the end. Or it's crazy. So how do you even know how to set a line for them? It's nuts. It's really crazy. Like, just think about the Oklahoma game. You come out and you just go ape on offense, just explode on offense, and then you have the interception at the end of the game that, you know, that's just still I have nightmares about. The Missouri game, you got all these games where teams are at the time are ranked higher than you, and you're handling them. And then all of a sudden, it goes away. How do you set a line for this? I just think nobody knows. Like, Vegas has no idea. It's just you're terrified when you set the line for the Auburn game, because you have no idea what really could happen. And I think that's what's going on. You just don't know how to set a line for Auburn. So look, I think that's going to be it for tonight. A lot of fun. Y'all are great every single week. It's a ton of fun doing these, and I want to keep doing it even as the season's over. I want to make this our thing on Sunday nights, just kind of get in and have some fun, cut up, talk about whatever, talk about the greatest catches, talk about the greatest whatever, doesn't matter. because football is going to be gone over here in just a little bit, and then we're going to be moving through recruiting season and the portal, and then kind of moving on to the next season. So, guys, I really appreciate you listening. I appreciate you tuning in, hanging in there with me, even through the dark times. But we're going to get through it. We're going to have fun together all the way. So if you like this video, like it. If you like this channel, subscribe to it. And catch me every single day. Jump back in every single day. We'll be back. It's another episode of the Top Button Podcast. Stay buttoned.
Thanks for listening, and drive home safely.